This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everybody, and once again, welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and extending a special welcome to all of you listening live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or tuning in to us with our free live streaming or the archived podcast of this show, and you're doing that on our Horse Racing Radio Network website at horseracingradio.net. Really happy to have you along for the next hour, as usual. And I was thinking about it as I was getting ready for this program. This is, as many of you know, the eighth consecutive year that we've been able to bring you Trainer Talk, and thanks to our partners, Fasig Tipton, for helping to make that possible. But so many of the stories that we've heard have been so unique. Everybody has that journey that they go on to eventually become a horse trainer, and then the journey that they take once they become a trainer. And tonight's guest certainly has a story that I think you're going to find very interesting. And this show comes on the heels of Susan Ditter, who joined me on the program last week. And I wanted to continue to shine the spotlight on the passionate distaffers, if you will, in the training ranks, and we're going to do that once again here today. So without further ado, today's guest is a native of Lutherville, Maryland. She has trained horses in her home state for more than three decades, saddling 326 winners thus far in her career. Please join me in welcoming trainer Lori Testerman to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, here this afternoon. Lori, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Happy to have
it
you
is,
along for the ride.
It's still morning.
Yeah, right now it is. Yeah, people listening, of course, recording this here in the morning, on Wednesday morning, people listening to us, of course, 6 o'clock Eastern across the country. But yeah, listen, you just finished up training here this morning and now back at the house. And that's kind of a typical pattern for most trainers, right? They'll get away from the barn for a little bit, but then eventually they have to make their way back over there.
Then back at it. It's an all-day affair.
Yeah, it
all day, every day.
What's your typical day like, Lori?
I usually leave the house about 4:30 in the morning, and I go into the barn and feed the horses, and they look forward to it. I've found over the years, the closer you stay to a routine, the happier they are. They know what to expect then. I feed the horses and then plan the training schedule for the morning, and off we go. About this time, I just fed them early lunch. I come home, eat my breakfast, and take a breather for a little while, and then head back.
How many horses?
Either to my barn or to the races, depends if I have something running.
Yeah, how many horses do you have in training right now, Lori?
Well, this year I have downsized, and I've got 6 horses in training, and I own all of them. All but one. And I just decided that it would be fun to own my own horses. I always train for other people, and that's exciting because I love to meet new people and have them in the barn. But this year I thought, well, let's try it. So this is pretty much a new experience, and we'll see at the end of the year how my accountant feels about it.
How do you feel about it so far?
So far, I really enjoy it because I know the animals so well, and if I worked a really nice filly this morning. She's not a morning workhorse. I was very happy with her work. She is not. She's the one that I do not own. And sometimes the owners want to see bullets. She's not that kind of horse. So if it's my horse, I don't have any explaining to do to anybody. If it's an owner's horse, I have to say, you know, I don't want a 36. We don't make any money in the morning.
You know, the best part about training horses that you own, too, is that it's job security. You know you can't fire yourself, right?
Exactly. Isn't that great? It really works for me. And you can be more, not sure what the right word is, but if I want to dream big, I can dream big.
Yeah.
If I think it's too tough for the horse, I can put him in where I feel. And I'm very lucky because the owners that have this little filly, they're very, very in tune with what I do. And with her, we've been very successful. She was a $1,500 purchase, and she's made them $160,000.
What's the name of that filly?
That There's Gold.
That There's Gold. I like that name.
Yeah. And my my little filly, I'm really cheap when I'm buying horses. It's terrible to say that, but I am. But she won an allowance race last week, and I only paid $1,000 for her.
Wow.
At Fasig Tipton. I bought her off her pedigree, which is lovely. She's out of a AP Indy mare. The only complaint I had when I bought her, she's very tiny, and it was funny because I sent her off to be broke, and when they sent her back to me, I'm like, this is the wrong horse. She's huge. So I had to pull up pictures that I took of her when I bought her and compare the markings to be sure it was her.
Wow. Is that always something?
Yes. With the perfect name, because it is always something with this business.
Yeah, that's so true.
That's why I named her that.
That's so true. And she's a daughter of, you mentioned the APND mare, but she's a daughter of Oxbow, right?
Yes.
Preakness Stakes winner. So her pedigree, mm-hmm. like you said, you bought her on pedigree. Her pedigree is there. Is pedigree to you more important sometimes than the physical when you're looking at young horses?
Well, to tell you the truth, I love young horses. That's my thing. Two-year-olds. I absolutely go crazy when two-year-olds are coming into the barn. But pedigree, if I like the horse and the dam side seems to be strong to me or has some good old back class, I love it. I don't care who they're by, who they're out of. As long as somewhere in the lineage there's some old class. I love the Dixieland Band line.
Yep.
Of course, Northern Dancer, you can't go wrong there. I just have a bunch of favorites, and if it's somewhere in there, I'm happy.
You know, and your story of purchasing her for $1,000 and now having her go on and be an allowance winner and doing, you know, great things on the racetrack, that story, I don't think, Lori, that story gets told enough in our sport when we're talking about attracting prospective new owners. You know, the fact that this is known as the sport of kings leads most people to believe that you have to go out and have millions of dollars to compete in this game, and you really don't.
Exactly. I tell everybody it's the only business in the world than your average Joe can own an NFL team.
Yeah.
You know, they really can. They can get into the business, let the horses, and I also tell them if the horse supports itself, and they go to the races, and they have a fun time with their friends and family, nice lunch, watch their horse run. If that horse pays its expenses, they're ahead of the game.
Yep.
Enjoy the day. It's a great hobby. And that's what I do. As a horse succeeds, then I go get another one.
Yeah, that's great. I love that story. I mean, you talk about, just think. I mean, now she's an allowance winner. Right. What's next for her? Will she start looking at maybe some tougher competition, maybe a minor stakes race?
I think so. I'm going to be completely honest here. She did surprise me the other day because I was racing her, getting her prepared for the grass because her mother was a turf horse. And a couple of races in there on the dirt, I know she got her highest buyer number on the dirt, but she's a different horse on the grass. So I thought, well, okay, I'll give her a race. And my instructions to the jockey were, it's been my experience that grass horses do not like the dirt hitting them in the face. So I said, keep it out of her face. So you can see when she's on the turn and the dirt's hitting her in the face, she backs up a little bit. When he sees a clear spot and parks her there, she took off running again. So I was just thrilled.
Yeah, so proud. I mean, I've had many trainers come on the show over the years and tell me that the horses they train oftentimes become like their children. And it sounds like you're talking about always something like you're a proud parent, Lori.
Oh, absolutely. When I go in the barn, I always feel like I'm running a kindergarten. When I go in, there's all the kids. There's Messy Marvin, and there's one that's so picky, and this one has to have a peppermint before she starts in the morning. And they all have their personalities, and that's the greatest part of it. I mean, it's funny. I've been training for over 40 years, and I love each and every one of them, and I still get butterflies when my horse is in the starting gate. It's like a roller coaster, and I'm just as nervous and excited as I was when I saddled my very first horse.
How long does it take you to figure out their...
left, I think I'd have to stop.
How long does it take you, Lori, to figure out their personalities once you get them into your barn?
Just a couple of days.
Wow.
Thoroughbreds, I think, really pick up your emotions. And I'll go through the barn and I tell the people that help me, my riders and everything, you know, stay up, stay happy, stay up. Because I think they work off their environment. If you're happy, they're happy.
Tell me the story of a horse or two that you've gotten to know that has been, I don't know, let me think of the right word, exceptionally quirky, I guess, or a personality that really caught you off guard when you think back on all the horses you've been around. What are a couple of those, Lori?
Well, of course, there's Disco Rico, and he was a phenomenal horse. He was really, really not only athletic and beautiful to look at, but it was amazing because when people would come into the barn, he was like a magnet. They would go to his stall, having never even been in the barn. They'd walk in, and he would just draw people to him. He was just a grand, grand animal. And a funny story was I had the DeRicos. They're wonderful people, and I'd had a horse for them, and they wanted to send him to New York, but they felt bad taking the horse from me. So they went down, I believe it was to Florida, and they bought a Maryland bred Disco Rico to send to me. And he was a great big strapping colt, but just a charm to work with, an absolute charm. Would love glazed donuts. Every morning he had to have a glazed donut before he started.
A glazed donut?
Oh, I loved them. Absolutely loved them.
That's great.
We'd have to stop at Dunkin' Donuts on the way in the morning just so he could get his treat. And when he would go out to work, you had to allot a minimum of 30 minutes because he had to walk out, look at the tracks, watch what's going on. Then he would back up on the track, and he'd have to stand there for another 15 or 20 minutes. And then he would gallop so leisurely to the pole, and as soon as you gave him his head, he'd go 3/8 and 33. And not even turn a hair, not bat an eye. I mean, he was just the most athletic horse. I had another nice colt named Excellent Ban who he won a couple local stakes, and the owner ended up wanting to sell him. So when it came time to sell him, the people were coming to pick him up, and we knew him. We knew his quirks, but if he didn't know you, you weren't going in the stall.
Mm-hmm.
So they called me to please come help them get in the stall to pick up the horse.
Wow.
That was pretty funny.
Wow, visiting with Lori Testerman.
But I've had a lot over the years, and you talk about passion. I've been passionate about these animals since I was a toddler. They're amazing. They're in tune. You can't have a bad day with a good horse.
Very well said. Talking with Lori Testerman here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I want to go back to Disco Rico for just a minute, because just talking about him for that minute or two isn't enough for him, because this is a horse that was so good. He gave you your two greatest stakes victories that you have on your resume. He's a horse that was a Maryland-bred champion male in 2000, the champion sprinter in 2001. He won 9 of 17 races. I could go on and on. But what was it that made Disco Rico such a special racehorse, Lori?
You know, they always say you can tell when a horse has class, and you really can. It's in all their actions. There's nothing malicious, nothing that you can do that they don't like. And they teach you a lot, and you learn a lot from them because they are so classy. I mean, they handle new surroundings, they handle new people, they show their feelings really blatantly out there. You know, I'm happy with this, I'm not happy with that. And they try. They want to run. They want to win.
Yeah, it's you can't, I don't know, I guess you can't measure what's inside, right? Is that the best way to say
Correct.
It?
Correct. Yeah, yeah. But you can sure feel it. You can feel it. It's funny that Disco didn't seem to matter what you did. He was along for the ride. It was like, sure, I've got this.
Yeah.
I've got this. Sure. Oh, no problem. Not only was he just beautiful to look at, he was just class, solid class. I'll never forget, I was in the paddock and Bob Baffert had a horse in the race. And of course, you know, with the type of horses he has and his ability as a trainer is unheard of. And he looked over at Disco Rico and he looked to his owner and said, "Boss, I think we brought the wrong ship to sail in this ocean." Which really, you know, me being a young trainer, that was like, oh my word, did you hear what Bob Baffert said about my horse? And I mean, what a nice guy. I mean, I spoke with him after the race. I'm sure he doesn't remember me, but Disco was that kind of horse. Wherever he went, people stopped and looked.
Yeah, what a racehorse, too. Of course, had to be put down at the age of 17 because of complications from laminitis in 2014. That had to be a very emotional day for you, Lori.
I think one of the hardest things was is he, after his last race, which I believe he won that, he got a conular fracture. And we went and had surgery on it, and it was fine. As a matter of fact, the vet from New Bolton called me after the recoup time was up and said, "Well, when's he going to race again?" And I explained to him, I said, I think we're going to stand him stud, because he was the kind of horse that would continue trying. He would keep trying. That's the way he was. And he was so special and so magnificent. And, wow, went on to have a super, super stud career.
Yeah,
remember, everything the horse did was great.
Do you remember the day that you got the phone call that they were going to have to put him down because of the laminitis?
Yeah, yeah. I was very grateful that his year as a stallion was so successful, but I'd be lying if I didn't say it kind of left a vacant spot in me.
Yeah.
Because horses like him are once in a lifetime.
Did I read?
They really are. I mean,
I've had
a lot of nice horses over the years, but he's definitely at the top.
Did I read, Lori, that he was the last stakes winner bred by longtime Maryland breeder Oliver Goldsmith?
You know, I believe he was. I believe he was. And what, I mean, he really had some nice success breeding horses. So what a lovely group to be in. Don't ask me to name his horses because I couldn't right now.
Well, Disco Rico, certainly special, and I know he meant so much to your career. After Disco Rico left the barn and you started, you know, retiring him to stud duty, did you notice that the phone was ringing quite a bit and people wanting to send horses to Lori Testerman because of what you had done with Disco Rico?
You know, it's funny. You kind of think it would happen that way, but a lot of the people that I train for are very small, you know, one-person horses. And although they admired Disco, I don't know, I guess they would think I was too busy because I was traveling a lot with him. And so I don't know. It did give me the, make me the first woman in the state of Maryland to ever win Most Outstanding Trainer, which that was a lifetime award, and Disco did that for me. But as far as bringing other horses in, they're thinking, oh, well, she's got that horse. She's not going to want mine. You know, that was the kind of the impression I got, which was sad because I love them all.
Yeah, I could see it going that way, too. You know, let's not gloss over the fact that you received the Maryland Outstanding Trainer Award that year, Lori, because that's quite an honor.
It certainly was for me, and especially be the first woman. When I started training, there were a couple of us out there, but not too many. And I don't know, everybody kind of thought it was a man's world, and then the swing came where people realized that women can train horses, and it really doesn't matter if you can read your horses and have your horses perform. It doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman.
Yeah,
I've watched more and more women, very successful women, come along and train horses, and I just think it's great. Throughout my whole career, my mother always said, when are you going to get a real job? I don't think she thought that you could love something so much and actually make a living from it.
What would you be doing if you weren't training horses, Lori?
Oh, Lord. Now, that is a good question. I've known I was going to do something with horses my whole life. I mean, I'm just obsessed with them as much now as I was when I was a kid. I think they're just magnificent animals. They're beautiful. All mine know me. The ones that I retire from racing, I had a really cool thing happen a couple years ago. A woman called me and said, my daughter bought her horse from you to be her show jumper. And I remember the horse. I remember the little girl. I think she was 15. Well, she was graduating college, and she still had the horse. And for her college present, her mother asked me, could I pull up his win picture? And she had it blown up into a poster size, and that was her graduation gift. So I do follow my horses, you know, when they leave my barn. So if I wasn't training racehorses, it would be something with horses.
Yeah. Talking with Lori Testerman here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. As you heard, she is extremely passionate about her horses. She's been training horses for 4 decades now and continuing to have success at very high levels around Maryland. And as a native of Maryland, that has to mean a lot, too, to be able to win races in your home state. I'd imagine that's pretty special, too, Lori.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny, we have the little fair meet here, Timonium, and it used to run for 30 days, but everybody from the neighborhood would come out and be able to mingle with my horses, and we had it was just a neighborhood thing. They all came, and of course, they all bet my horses, and I had a really fast sprinter that ran at Timonium once. And I ran him back 4 days later, and he won. His name was Barnyard Monkey, and he was so fast. He was so fast, and he actually got a standing ovation the second time.
Wow.
And I'd only ever seen that once, and that was when Skipaway won at Pimlico. So here I got it at Timonium. It was great.
That is pretty cool. You know, you talked about bursting onto the scene when you first started, and I won't call it bursting onto the scene necessarily, but bursting into the profession of training racehorses and being a female in a male-dominated sport. And I've always said, look, if you can train racehorses, it doesn't matter if you're a man, a woman, you're a horse trainer. But for you as a woman in a male-dominated sport, Lori, were there some unique challenges that you faced when you were getting started?
Yeah, to get people to take me serious and to stop calling me little girl. And I think I was 50, and they still call me little girl.
That's okay,
that was
though.
Pretty funny. Right, and my husband was a jockey, and he Not so much a successful jockey, but an incredible rider. I mean, there wasn't a horse he couldn't ride. He had the same passion I did. And as long as he was there, they would talk to him and not me, not realizing I was the one at the barn doing all the work, and it was my name on the program. That was a, it took a while for people. I think Disco Rico also was the one that opened that door and said, oh, it really is her.
Yeah. Yeah. Your husband, David, he died in 2001. Of course, you have, what, two children? Is that right?
Yes. Yes, yeah. And two grandchildren now.
Oh, beautiful. Are they into horses at all? Do they like the horses?
They like to come watch my horses run. That's about it. Although my granddaughter, she's acting like she might have the horse bug.
Would you want her to be a horse trainer?
If she loves it as much as I do, yes. There's nothing else. As long as she's got the same desire and wants to do what I do, sure.
You can't succeed in this profession because of the fact it's 365 days a year and it's 7 days a week. You can't succeed unless you have that passion. Can you, Lori?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Well, at least for me, you can. I've got to look at my horses every single day. I've got to have my hands on them. If I miss a day, matter of fact, I had surgery on my hand 2 weeks ago, so I wasn't there that day. But I've got a guy who's been working with me for, I guess Danny's been there about 30 years. So I feel comfortable with him, but not too many other people.
Yeah. Yeah. You had a quote that I read as I was getting ready for the show, and I loved it. You said, I have learned over the years that training horses is an all-consuming job. And I don't know if you could sum it up any better than that one sentence.
That's absolutely right. It is. And things that you do, other people may simulate, but it's not you. I mean, it's not their hands on the knees and the ankles, and are they eating, and are they happy, and, you know, I guess why I like the two-year-olds so much is because I can pretty much read them. A quick story, I had a horse that was on antibiotics because we had castrated him. And the vet came to give him his antibiotics that day, just penicillin. And I had to go up to the gate for something. And when I came back in the barn, I knew the horse was at the other end. I knew something was wrong. I didn't see him. I didn't have to know what went on. And I went running up the barn, and my foreman said, what are you doing? I said, he's having a reaction to the penicillin. And they looked at me like I was crazy. And I got up there, and yes, he was. He absolutely was having a reaction. And they talk about it still today. How did I know it? I could just feel it.
Wow.
But the horse ended up fine. The veterinarian was still there. And that happens sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about being one with the horses. Lori Testerman is one with all of her horses, and she has been since she started training 40 years ago. Going to continue my visit with Lori on the other side of this. Stay with me. You're listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Facing Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The Phasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale is hotter than ever. The nation's premier two-year-olds in training sale is now accepting nominations for the 2020 sale. In 2019, the sale recorded a record average, record median, and sold more horses for $1 million or more than any other two-year-old sale in North America, including a $3.65 million sale topper that was the most expensive two-year-old sold in North America since 2006. Nominate today, the Phasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale, April 1st, 2020, at Gulfstream Park. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Make Woodbine the place to train and race your thoroughbred in 2020. The Woodbine backstretch is equipped with a 1 mile dirt training track and a 7 furlong turf training track. Racing surfaces include a 1 mile all-weather Tapeta main track, a 7 furlong inner turf course, and the 1.5 mile E.P. Taylor turf course. Opening day is April 18th, the Queen's Plate June 27th, Woodbine Mile Weekend September 19th and 20th, and the Pattison Canadian International, now a $1 million purse, on Sunday, October 19th. Visit woodbine.com/incentives for the full stake schedule and more information.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Magic Aluna, Weston Hamilton in control from Combat Queen, Elite About a Length, as they round that tart turn. Always Something is in third, and Jen's the Boss is in fourth. Pretty Edgy hustle along on the inside, and between horses is Virginia Beach. Top of the stretch, Magic Aluna. Magic Aluna turns for home, still the one to beat. Combat Queen on the outside, and Always Something down to the inside with 3/60s left to go. Pretty Edgy just even pace for a long left. Three chances up the inside. Always Something. Always Something punching through up the fence with Charlie Mark. It is Always Something, Magic Aluna, and the outside is Combat Queen. Always Something, coming home at 11-1. Always Something, Combat Queen, the photo with Magic Aluna. Then it was Virginia Beach and Pretty Edgy.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. That was the voice of Maryland Racing, my good friend Dave Rodman, with the call of the eighth race this past Saturday at Laurel, an allowance victory for Always Something, and trainer Lori Testerman, who is my special guest here on Trainer Talk this evening. A second career victory for Always Something, who was named because of the fact that, yeah, there's always something that comes up in horse racing, and Always Something found her way to the winner's circle again this past Saturday, and that was a special moment. I'm going to continue my visit with Lori momentarily, right after I remind everyone that if you did miss any portion of this show or any of our Trainer Talk programs, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. A podcast of this program is available for you to listen to at your leisure. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to follow us on social media, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook and on Instagram. And we'll have plenty of content coming your way on those channels as we move throughout the year and start bringing you our coverage of all the big races around the country. Well, Lori, that race call, a little trip down memory lane for you. I know it was only a few days ago, but you talked in the first half of the show about Always Something and how special she was, a $1,000 purchase at the Fasig Tipton sale, and now she has earned more than $68,000 in her career. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. And she really is special. She has all the makings of a really, really nice filly, and she's a thrill to have in the barn.
So where did this journey, this love of horse racing, initially begin for Lori Testerman?
Well, the horse bug I always had. I think I was born with it. But when I was about 15, I guess, I was very tall for my age, so I used to sneak into Timonium and Walcott's. And it just grew. It just grew from there. I respected the animals. As time went on, I was a foreman for a guy named Charlie Lewis, mm-hmm. and one of his owners had a huge piece of property and decided that she wanted racehorses and asked me, would I come out there and manage her farm? And I said, well, no, I want to be a trainer. And she said, well, what do you need? And I said, well, I need three horses to run in my name and that I can train. And she said, well, okay, go to the sale and buy them. and that was Nancy Stoutberg, and she was just a wonderful woman. She had a farm named Harford Hill, and I started out there, and we would buy young horses and break them and race them, and we boarded horses, and a lot of those horses stayed with me to run. And it just grew from there. My husband would gallop the horses, and I was on the ground. And like with any husband and wife duo, there's arguments. He'd say, I told you this horse is off in his left front. And I said, well, I can't wave a magic wand. Let's drop back and punt and get them together.
But let's clarify one thing, Lori, that the wife is always correct, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially when the wife is the trainer. Yep, no doubt about it.
All right, good. You can continue now.
It was great training off the farm and having the access that if a horse needed a break, you could take them there. And then we started breeding horses and raising them and breaking them and running them, and it was really a great thing. I don't do a farm now because you haven't worked until you've had a farm. I mean, no sooner do you put a fence up than the horses have torn it down and constantly cutting grass and weed eating. I mean, I'm too old for that now. But I do kind of miss the foaling. I used to love it when the babies were born, and I learned a lot. We lived in New York for 2 years for a guy named Sam Zara, who had Zara Stables, and we ran the farm for him. And he had a wonderful veterinarian out there who kind of took me under his wing and taught me how to foal mares. And so I've pretty much been through all aspects of it. And if I had to miss something, it would be the foaling a little bit because, good Lord, they're precious. When those little foals are born, they are just precious.
Yeah.
But then it went on to, when I started with Nancy Stoutberg, I trained for her privately for about 12 years. And they used to call me Longshot Lori because I would bring these young horses in off the farm, and they would win. And one thing led to another, and my stock improved, and I met more people, and I hope and believe I gained their respect by my horse's performances.
Yeah, you know, by the way, visiting with Longshot Lori Testerman, here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Dipton. I love that nickname, by the way, Lori. I might use that a couple more times before we're finished. I love that.
Oh, good.
Hey,
I ran a little 2-year-old not too long ago that he'd been close, but he would finish like 5th by 2 lengths and 6th by 3 lengths, and we kept saying, put blinkers on him. So we put blinkers on him, and I think he got beat 22 lengths. So we said, well, that's not it. And I took the blinkers off, and Horatio Caramanas rode him for me. The horse's name was Rock and Ron. And I said, Horatio, just finish 4th, and I'll be happy. And he won and paid $50-some. And we're all standing there with our jaws on the ground saying, and he came back. Horatio was laughing so hard. He said, you told me to finish 4th, and I win. I said, well, let's do that every day. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I mean, just try to hit the board with a horse that you think is overmatched, and sometimes you luck out, and you get the top prize, right?
Right, and they wake up, and they're like, oh, I like this. This is fun. I get it. Yeah, I always laugh and said I wish they came with a set of instructions or they could talk, but if they could talk, they'd probably lie to us.
Yeah. Would you ever bet on any of those long shots, Lori?
I'm not really a gambler. I usually try and bet $2 across on my horses, just as a superstitious support system I have going on.
Every horse?
But that's about it. I try to, yeah. Yep. I just put 2 across the board on them and say, oh, that's it.
So when you were sneaking into Timonium, at, what were you, 16 mm-hmm. years old, I guess it was, when you were sneaking into Wakats, how would you sneak in?
Oh, just slide under the fence. Timonium has the state fair there every year. But they used to be open for stabling longer, and the meet itself, I think, when I was there, it was like 45 days. So I was skinny as a rail and could just sneak through the fence and go down and walk hots. And back then they had Pinkerton guards that used to come around and they'd say, you again, out. So when I turned 15, I was able to get a work permit. And matter of fact, I was walking huts for Billy Christmas.
Yep.
And that was pretty much where I started.
Wow. What made people like Billy Christmas, like Charlie Lewis, who you mentioned, and Nancy Stopberg, what made them such good horse people?
Oh, my. Well, Nancy loved the animals. She loved to look out over her fields and see the horses grazing. And she had a lot of confidence in me. I guess it's because she could see how passionate I was about the animals. I always have been. I always will be. I remember I worked for a gentleman named Tom Patterson, and he said I was the first woman he ever hired. And after that, he would only hire women. He said they were more patient with the horses than they, it wasn't too much. There wasn't a time clock. It was when the job was done, you went home. And he saw that. He saw that I had no problem staying there all day and grooming a horse or taking a horse out at night that needed to walk in the evening. I'd never have had a problem with it. Whatever they needed, they got.
Yeah, yeah. Lori, when you think back on these 40 years of training horses, what are some of the things that you're probably most proud of?
Lasting this long, putting two kids through college, buying a house. You know, it's my son says to me all the time, you really don't have a pay base because you don't know, am I going to win two races this month? Am I going to win three races this month? I won four. Let me go buy a car. You know, you don't know that. So my son always tells me, Mom, how did you figure it? How did you do it? And I said, well, when times are good, you put it aside. When times are bad, that's when you dig into it. And it's always been like that. I don't think I'd know what to do if I had a regular paycheck.
Yeah. You know, that's such a unique aspect of this profession of training racehorses. I don't think we talk about it enough, but you're right. It's not a steady paycheck, and it's not a 9-to-5 job, and you have to handle things a little bit differently than you would if you were just going to a job to work 40 hours a week and you were collecting a paycheck every week or every 2 weeks.
Absolutely, and you know, I might be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure that the racehorses still fall under agriculture, and that's like a farmer's. It's when the sun comes up and the sun goes down. That's what it is. And then the rest of the time, as far as the racehorses go, you're filled with the worry. Well, should I have done this? Maybe I should do that. Let me drive over there. I drove over, I guess it was Sunday. Here the weather's turning to 70 degrees, and my horses are all blanketed. They'll bake. But the one who has no hair on her hardly at all is always something. So off I'm up to Hunt Valley to pick her up a lighter sheet to bring back to the barn at 12 o'clock. And I get there and I'm like, oh, well, it's still cold in here. She can keep her heavy blanket on. But that's how my mind works. How is this horse? How is that horse? What does this one need? And it stays like that until I shut my eyes at night.
Yeah. Yeah. Do the kids come out to the races and watch your horses run?
Oh, I drag them along a lot. A lot if I can, if they're scheduled. Both of them they're adults now and they're working, so their schedule doesn't always allow them to. But whenever I can, I'm like, come to the races, come watch. And if they can't be there physically, it's great that we've got television now. So they can watch my races, or my daughter watched Always Something Win on the phone. She was on her way to work, and she sent me a text, great job, Mom.
That's great.
But
yeah, it's great that you can share it with them, even though they're not there with you physically, you can still share it. And it's great that they support you in what you're doing, too. And I know that's all they've ever known is a mother that's a horse trainer, so it's cool that they're that into it with you.
It's so funny. Both my children were raised in a barn. Both of them were. I had jolly jumpers hanging from the shed row. My daughter got her first haircut right underneath the pump water spigot at Timonium. I had my kids were in walkers, and they would walk down, they'd walk down the shed row in their walkers. That's where they learned. And the racetrack is such a wonderful, wonderful community when you've been here as long as I have. People look out for them. They know your kids. People can't believe my daughter's 26. When did that happen? Oh, when I turned 62. You know, it's just part of it. I mean, they were, both of them were raised in a barn. And it's funny, my mother used to say, what do you think, you were raised in a barn? Well, yeah they were. They were.
So when they leave the door open, it's legit. They actually can leave the door open because they were raised in a barn.
That's right. It's just a part of it. And then I was a little bit surprised that my kids didn't jump into the business with me. And I'm envious of, like, the Gaudettes, whose entire family is just engulfed in it. I'm jealous. And Charles Brock, his grandson's the blacksmith. His son runs the barn. I mean, I'm jealous of those people. I think it's just wonderful that they have the ability to do that. But my son is a DJ, and he also works at Mercy Hospital, and my daughter's an artist. So that's where we sit.
Yeah.
Maybe I can get her to draw pictures of horses or something.
There you go. Preferably in the winner's circle.
Right.
Lori Testerman, my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Lori, obviously, you know, you mentioned, you know, not having the kids with you in your profession, but you did have your husband. I mentioned he passed away in 2001. How difficult was that to continue on with training horses after David passed away? And did you ever think at any point of saying, you know what, forget it, I need to do something else?
No, I never thought that. Was I worried? Yeah. My daughter was young, and my kids, fortunately, are 15 years apart, so I did have a built-in babysitter, which was pretty helpful. But, you know, it's hard. A business that y'all started together, and when he passed away, it was difficult. But once again, the people on the racetrack that knew us, they all were there to support me.
Yeah.
For whatever I needed. Everybody was, you know, right there. Do you need help? I can help you. Sure. It is like a family. With everything that's happening around Pimlico and it changing and only racing 12 days, that's hard for me because I've been stable there for so long. But hopefully all these changes and adjustments they're making will be for the better of racing in Maryland. And I'm sure I'll bend with it because that's what we do. You just adapt.
Yeah, and you don't really have a choice. You just have to kind of go with it. And I know over the 4 decades you've been training, you've seen so many changes with the industry in Maryland. It does seem like there's a – we go up and broadcast the Maryland Million every year, and we broadcast the Preakness. We've done that, been the official radio network of the Preakness since 2008. And it does seem like there is a very positive vibe surrounding the industry in the state of Maryland now. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. It's sad to see what's happening with the trainers that are cheating. It's sad to see that. It puts a shadow over everything. But this, too, will get by. If anything, horsemen are tough.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in that situation, and not to, you know, get into this, because we could spend 2 hours talking about this, Lori, but the situation with Jason Service and Jorge Navarro and the indictments that came down earlier this week, because you brought it up, for somebody like yourself and like the Graham Motions of the world and the Mark Cassies, who have done things by the book, and the 99% of horse trainers in the game who play the game by the rules, when you see something like this and this comes to light, what are the emotions that go through you when you hear about these things, Lori?
Well, the first one is sadness, because it's not necessary. I mean, it really, really isn't necessary. The sport is it's not all money. It's not all about money. It's about the animal, which, you know, I don't really think it's natural for a horse to go in a metal contraption, break out, and be in front, but it is their natural instinct to run in a herd and to be in front, to control the herd. That's a natural instinct of the animal. And to use things to enhance that for your own profit, I mean, my horses can't compete against drugs. My horses can compete against any horse they've got in the right spot, but not against drugs. And it just makes me really sad that the horses in their barns are considered disposable. I don't have a disposable horse in my barn, and never have. And I just find that really heartbreaking. These are people that I admired and respected for their talent. Well,
yeah.
Not a whole lot of talent in an injectable.
Yeah, that all goes out the window now. And you're right, it is sad and heartbreaking, and those are very good words to use to describe that situation. When you talk to a prospective young trainer, Lori, that's thinking about getting into this game, what do you tell them? What advice do you give to them?
Oh, let me see. Well, be prepared for hard work and don't compromise yourself or your horse. And by that, I mean put your horse where it can win if you can. Sometimes owners have bigger expectations of the horse than you know in your heart is right. So you have to run for a little more because that's what they want. But if you hang out long enough and you're true to your horse and you take a strong, healthy horse over there, you will win.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. Just be true.
Yeah, and put the interest of the horse first, I would imagine, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Make sure you know what your horse needs, what it wants. Is it peaking? And sometimes it's hard. I mean, you'll have a horse and you'll say, you know, she's 95% there. I just need that extra 5%, but the race is in 2 days. So you have to get a little exotic with your training. Instead of galloping, you may jog one day, or you may change their feed, or, you know, there's little tricks you do just peak at the optimum time. When I started, you used to enter your horses, I think it was like 48 hours. And scratch time was 24 hours. Well, of course, now you're entering 5 days ahead.
Yeah.
So it's a lot more difficult to say. You have to kind of change your strategy. I used to work my horses a lot more than I do now. Because you never know. I mean, 5 days ahead of time, I used to blow them out sometimes the day before, one horse the morning of. But that was what that horse needed. Now I've noticed because things are changing, well, I step back further. You know, I'll work the horse 10 days out or 2 weeks out instead of 3 days.
Yeah, the game is...
That's the biggest change I made.
The game has completely changed, and you've had to evolve with it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I can't say that it was easier then, but you know, when you're old school and you've been doing something the same way for so many years and they change it, the horses adapt a lot easier than I do.
Yeah.
They really do. You know, I'm kind of hard-headed like that. I've got my ideas and my thoughts, and some horses, like, always something. Her prep for her race was a week out, and she did a phenomenal breeze over the track, so I knew she was well. All I had to do was hold her at that level for her race, and I knew she would try. Whereas that there's Gold, she's 6 years old. She knows what she's doing. So her work was 2 weeks prior to her race. She's going to win in 2 weeks. But that way she can get herself all sassy and silly up to race time. Whereas Always Something, she needed about a week out so that she could be on her toes and keep her mind on her business, because she's young.
Yeah. Talking with Lori Testerman here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. As you can hear from this interview here tonight, she has a passion for the horses and a passion for the profession like no other. And she has had that passion for 40 years. It has not changed, and she continues to have success in our sport. And it's pretty special. Lori, when you think back on what might be your best training job you've ever done. You know, we'll hear golfers talk about the best shot they ever hit, or a baseball player, the best swing that they ever made. When you think about the best training job you ever did with a horse, what do you think it might be?
Well, of course, Disco Rico's got to be in there. One of the biggest thrills I had is when we were at the three-year-old award ceremony. And you have to remember this. I was relatively young when I had him, and the only thing I knew was how to make sure a horse was fit and how to make sure a horse was healthy. And I knew that horse, but Tony Dutrow had gone up to the podium because he received an award. And he said, ladies and gentlemen, I want to say something first. And he said, I just have to commend Lori Tusterman for the incredible job she's done with this horse, Disco Rico. And to this day, that was just something that I saw stars. I mean, how another trainer, you know, who ran a big, successful stable, and when I had Disco, I think I only had like 10 horses, or $5,000 claimers.
Yeah.
But to have him step up and comment on my talent and my ability, what a thrill. What an absolute thrill. I never did tell him that either after he said that, but that just really, really struck home with me that someone else noticed, someone who I admired noticed how hard I was working.
Yeah, it's a great story. It's a great story. Talk about, I guess, Lori, I'll ask it to you this way. If there was one other trainer that you could spend the day with and just hang out with and pick their brain and ask them whatever you want, who would that trainer be?
Well, there's two of them, actually. One would be Wayne Lucas, because I just admire his class. Wow. Wow. I mean, it's just, and I've spoken with him several times when he comes up for the Preakness. What a classy, classy individual. Always has time to stop and talk. He had a quarter horse lead pony that he was on at Pimlico, and all the trainers would walk out there and watch their horses gallop, and he's sitting on the 16-hand quarter horse, and his rider was getting run off with on his horse, and she ran around the track once, and nobody's saying anything, and I walked up and pet his pony and said, wow, what a pony. So he started giving me the history on the pony, and the rider's getting run off a second time around, and he looks up, and then he says, excuse me a minute. And he walked down the track, and when the horse was rolling by for the third time, he took the pony from a standstill to a wham, reached over and pulled his horse up, casually walked back, let the horse go back to the barn, walked up beside me and said, and what were we talking about? Which I thought was just so cool. I mean, just, you know, and him, and I think I would love to talk to Woody Stevens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, these are older class acts that had success the hard way.
Yeah, you can't.
You know, they built themselves up in the business, kind of like me. And you just have to admire it. And I'd love to sit and swap stories one day and listen to their answers to questions that I have.
Yeah, you can't pick two better individuals than Wayne Lucas and Woody Stevens. You just can't. Lori, it looks like we've got about 30 seconds left to wrap this one up, so I'm just going to thank you very much for taking the time here. It has been a wonderful visit, and all the best moving forward with all of your horses, Lori.
Thank you so much. It's been a joy.
Yeah, thank you so much. And by the way, if you're looking for her in the program, she goes by Valora Testerman. That's her given name by her mother. Didn't get to that story, but she said her mother had a little fun with her with that name, is what she told me. So, Lori Testerman here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you missed any portion of the show, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast at your leisure. And don't forget, follow us on Twitter at HRN, Horse Racing Radio Network, on Facebook and on Instagram. For my special guest, Lori Testerman, for my producer, Lee Delapina, here in our Lexington studios, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to this edition of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.